This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 15th of May 2022. And today is the History of Amateur Radio edition, and we've dug deep to find some interesting stories for you. Today we explore some of the myths around amateur radio. We reflect on what happened at last week's Wireless Institute annual general meeting, and we discuss the future of our history. The team this week is Andrew VK6AS, Roy VK6XV, Mike has succumbed to allergy, but he hasn't provided a note from his mum, and I'm Bob VK6POP, the News West producer. After the broadcast, don't go away before you join in the callbacks, and if there are no callbacks, jump onto our website vk6.net and record your call sign there.
From the Morning Bulletin at Rockhampton, Queensland, on Friday the 25th of October 1935, Radio Amateur Feat, English Contact with Queensland and the Value of the Shortwave. A further demonstration of the scientific theory that radio communication is greatly strengthened when sunspots appear was given today by Miss Nellie Corry of Walton-on-the-Hill near Reigate in England, says a London message. One of the three English women operating transmitters, Miss Corry, who built her own apparatus, says, "I was listening in the early hours in the hope of communicating with Australia. First I picked up Algiers. Then came a faint Morse message from Queensland. I returned the greetings on behalf of the Radio Society of Britain, and we talked in Morse for some minutes." Mr. E.J. Laker of Cranley, Surrey, earlier in the week, made contact with an Australian amateur operating a 10-metre wavelength. Mr. John Claricoats, Secretary of the Radio Society, explains that members have not previously been able to carry out long-range transmissions on shortwave sets in such ideal conditions. "These conditions," he said, "now are such that shortwaves have less opposition than usual. I believe this is largely due to the fact that a new cycle of sunspot activity is now starting. Scientists say that a new cycle starts every 11 years. Clearly, these low wavelengths are much more valuable than was at first believed. Let's hope the same is going to happen with the start of our latest sunspot cycle. And get on air and make some noise."
This one's aimed at Wireless Institute members, however. The rest of you can listen in, because what I've got to say should be of interest to anyone involved with running an organisation of any size. And before the self-appointed choir boys dig out their hymn books crying glory hallelujah, there he goes again, put your books away, take off your cassocks and hear me out. Because what I want to say isn't anti-anyone, it's a story about annual general meetings in general. Using the experience of last week's Wireless Institute AGM as a recent example. Saturday's AGM performance was a huge improvement on last year's shambles. However, I'd like to point out what would have made it a lot better and more palatable to members. Company AGMs are a formality required under company law and ought to be treated that way. They are about presentations of reports, including financial and directors' reports, and conducting or announcing the result of elections of directors or office bearers. They are not for the airing of grievances or point scoring, as we sometimes see. I've been to AGMs of very large national organisations, and these have been slick, almost orchestrated affairs, all over in a short time, with tea and bickies served promptly. And it used to be that way with the Wireless Institute of Australia. Now back to last weekend's meeting. Firstly, and this is very important, the company's financial year ended on December 31st. There were 4 months in which to prepare and audit the financials, committee reports, give notice to members and distribute papers to members. Apart from notice given by email, and I assume snail mail to members without email, everything else was late. The director's report, financial and auditor's report, was sent out only a day or two before the meeting. The committee reports were distributed via email the night before the meeting, and in the absence of effective proofreading, one of those reports contained an embarrassing clangour directed towards WA Amateur Radio News, that's us, and its president, Andrew, and the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, for which the president of the Wireless Institute had to apologise at the start of the meeting. And I believe he copped it in the neck from more than a few people afterwards for mentioning Rasa by name. We still have children in our midst. But that bit's done. And thanks, Scott, for having the courage of your convictions and standing up for what was right. The meeting, although well conducted, became bogged down in minor detail, taking forever to deal with a comment about a typo in the Constitution and a small correction to be made to the minutes of last year's meeting. These discussions simply don't belong in the AGM. The remark about the Constitution was apparently made at the previous AGM, but not followed up. There should have been an amendment proposed in a notice of motion sent out with the meeting notice. The correction to last year's minutes should have been raised ages ago on the first circulation of the minutes, which ought to be not long after the meeting. In order to streamline the AGM in past years, the board introduced the open forum, giving members the chance to ask questions and raise issues afterwards, leaving the AGM part uncluttered. Because Saturday's meeting was bogged down with long discussions on errors in the minutes and typos and points of order, the open forum didn't happen. We've probably all heard of the five P's. Prior preparation prevents poor presentation, and in some version there's another P in there. I'd like to suggest that the Wireless Institute commences its AGM preparation a lot earlier in order to improve the meeting and return to the previous practice of providing sufficient notice and timely reports. I look forward to an improvement in next year's effort.
From Western Australia, this is VK6ARN and you're listening to News West.
It's that time of the year again, the start of the Ham College Regulations Standard and Advanced course. Pity those students having to grapple with the memory test that's the regulations assessment. It could and should be an open book exam. Maybe that'll happen when the syllabus changes and online assessment arrives. We live in hope. As it falls to me to tutor the group about the regulations, what about resolving a couple of urban myths that have grown up over time? It's now perfectly legal for foundation licensees to operate and use any transmitting equipment they wish to, at their power limit, of course. However, the important thing about this is that no ham radio license trains or gives you the skills to build, repair, or modify electronic equipment. And the urban myth was that foundation licensees couldn't modify radios. They actually just couldn't use them. Your license is granted on you having a certificate of proficiency to operate a radio, not for being an electrician or electronic engineer. Even the famous Ross Hull of Memorial Contest fame unfortunately electrocuted himself after all. Oh, and FCALs may use all emission modes as well, as those restrictions went out a few years ago, even if the syllabus hasn't changed. What about the transmission of entertainment? This is interesting, as the LCD doesn't define it. It's certain, and it's been agreed by the regulator, that music per se isn't considered entertainment. So the use of a couple of bars of a tune as a link, for example in news items, is perfectly legitimate, as are the actions of a VK3 amateur who's experimenting into fidelity in SSB transmissions by sending significantly longer streams of music. Competing with a commercial radio station isn't, however, permitted. Common sense, really. Oh, and Roy's Helpline. May be advertising, but it also has approval from the ACMA as a service to amateurs, and the previous requirement not to mention money has been swept away. I quite miss Roy's voice uttering 150 decibels or nearest offer. There's one other thing. In the past, an amateur radio AOCP and license may have been an entry point to, or even a promotion tool for an occupation. For right or for wrong, that isn't the case anymore. However, for some amateurs, it is their highest ever level of educational attainment, for which they studied long and hard. But a small but vociferous minority declare that the qualification is given away these days. Well, it isn't. But equally, it isn't a PhD in science. And I say again, I wouldn't want to use the word repeat in case I'm told I'm not firing another salvo. Your license is actually a permit to operate transmitting equipment under the regulations that the ACMA has promulgated and can and occasionally does enforce. This is Andrew, Victor Kilo 6 Alpha Sierra from WA Amateur Radio News and Ham College.
These three stories are from the Perenjori Pioneer, Saturday the 19th of January 1935, and it seems that the fight against radio interference has been a long one, and we haven't won yet. But first, let's look at the story of the admitting to membership of the Japanese Amateur Radio League with the International Amateur Radio Union. And this one's headed Radio in Japan. The election of membership in the International Amateur Radio Union of the Japanese Amateur Radio League has been announced. The Japanese body has been the organised representative of amateur radio in that country for the past 5 years. The IARU, Amateur Societies of 25 Nations, has been in existence for nearly 10 years. It is recognised at international radio conferences as the spokesman of organised amateur radio, representing 60,000 licensed amateur radio stations in all parts of the world. The countries represented in the Union are the United States, in which the headquarters are maintained at the offices of the American Radio Relay League, and then there's Italy, Canada, Czechoslovakia, Germany, Denmark, Irish Free State, Colombia, Mexico, Netherlands, Netherlands Indies, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Great Britain, Portugal, Belgium, France, South Africa, Finland, Sweden, Spain, Switzerland, and Australia. The next heading is Fighting Static. A comprehensive plan to reduce interference was launched by the Radio Manufacturers Association's Board of Directors. In the public interest, as well as that of the radio industry, a broad centralised movement to reduce electrical interference with radio reception was recommended by the RMA Engineering Division, of which Dr. W.R.G. Baker of Camden, New Jersey, is chairman, and was approved by the RMA Managing Board. An interference conference of leading radio engineers will be held this month in Rochester, coincident with the winter meeting of the Institute of Radio Engineers, and detailed plans made for institution of many efforts to reduce radio interference. And another heading, Combating Interference. Regulations designed to combat electrical interference have recently come into operation in New Zealand. Radio inspectors have been equipped with greater powers, and they must be afforded all reasonable facilities and assistance in order that the cause of interference may be localised and measures taken to overcome it. The most important clause reads, "It shall not be lawful for any person to install, use, sell, or manufacture any interfering equipment, whether wireless telegraphic apparatus or not." Provision is made in later clauses for appeals for exemption, which may be granted at the discretion of the Minister of Telegraphs. And we're still fighting that fight in modern times, aren't we?
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
From, would you believe, the Don Dorigo Gazette and Guy Fawkes Advocate, Friday the 9th of August 1935. Radio tips. Set owners often find themselves inconvenienced by crippling aerial mishaps. In the Australian journal Spark Gap for August, they give the following hints which the amateur radio mechanic should find helpful. Pin back your ears. Emergency insulators. Emergency insulators may be made from many household articles. A stout rubber band makes a useful ring insulator, whilst a section cut from an ebonite tube answers the same purpose. A rubber doorstop garnishes an insulator of the reel type, the aerial wire being fed through the central hole while the halyard cord runs around a groove cut out in the circumference. An old rubber heel with two holes cut in it can also be utilised, cord and wire being threaded through the holes at the opposite ends. Splicing the aerial, if it's necessary to splice together two or more pieces of wire for the aerial, the joints should be first scraped clean, twisted together, and then wrapped around with tinfoil. A final coating of adhesive tape will complete the job, and an electrical connection between the lengths of wire will be perfect.
Now, this little snippet of news comes from the Daily News, Perth, Friday the 10th of June 1949. And the heading is Amateur Radio Enthusiast Sets Trap Which Catches Pirate. Wellington, Friday. How an amateur radio enthusiast pinpointed an unlicensed transmitter at Paraparamu, arranged another rendezvous on the air with the operator, and ultimately led a team of investigators to the transmitter, was told by Mr. W.D. Gorman, an officer of the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters. The amateur radio detective is Mr. J.A. Gasson, who operates with the call sign ZL2IN. Towards the end of last month, Mr. Gasson became suspicious of an operator who was using the call sign ZL2AG. He found that this call was not listed amongst licensed amateurs. When an unknown operator began chipping in on control tower messages, Mr. Gasson noticed the similarity between the unknown's voice and that simulated at the unlisted station. After one or two attempts, Mr. Gasson succeeded in making contact with the unlicensed caller and, in amateur radio parlance, made a further schedule with him, with the authorities standing by. Mr. Gasson got in contact with ZL2AG on Wednesday night, according to the schedule. A youth aged between 16 and 17 will be charged with unlawful transmission of messages. Illicit transmissions last week caused interference and confusion on New Zealand Civil Airways traffic control frequency. And the Kiwis reckon we have funny place names, and they claim to have invented the pavlova.
And here's a patriotic cry from AR Magazine, April 1952, and the editorial. A stirring message and no doubt an inspiration to each and every one of us, entitled A Call to the People of Australia, was recently promulgated throughout the press and radio stations of Australia. From this message springs the thought that it could be applied to the radio amateurs of this country, and in no small degree the members of the Wireless Institute of Australia, in that we're in danger from the apathy of the general member in not doing his bit or not putting his all towards achieving the goal of introducing each and every licensed amateur to become a member of the Institute. We believe that each of us has a duty to perform by recruiting into our ranks at least one non-member, and in doing so help further our aim, from which comes additional benefits in the administrative, social and financial spheres of our hobby. What are you doing towards increasing this return? Are you the one who leaves it to the other fellow? If so, your apathy, coupled with that of a great proportion of your fellow members, is the very thing that places the burden on the faithful few, who are in turn called the clique because their best endeavours don't meet with your approval. Does it ever occur to you that your efforts aren't recorded so that they can be the subject of criticism? Perhaps you prefer to shelter in your seat at the general meeting and say nothing until the meeting's over, or in your shack vent your opinions where they do the least good. Therefore, we call upon you individually and collectively to reflect on these remarks, and in doing so, give thought as to how your future efforts can be of benefit to the amateur radio and the Commonwealth of Australia. That's from the Federal Executive.
Amateur radio history, we talk about it, and we deliver snippets of it on News West every 4 weeks or so. Something that the amateur radio community could consider is the establishment of a radio history collection, especially amateur radio. Because when you think about it, we, that is amateurs, is mostly where radio as we know it came from. To the best of my knowledge, there isn't a definitive collection that portrays the birth and development of radio, especially in Australia, at least not here in Western Australia. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that a wireless or radio museum was expected to be established at Wireless Hill, and this never happened. In fact, as I understand it, most of the equipment donated or collected for the purpose has gone into storage somewhere. You need to bear with me a bit now because I'm going to float off with some what-ifs. What if an organisation was established, mostly from within amateur radio circles, with the purpose of creating a well-curated, professionally set-up museum of radio, in the style of an interpretive centre, learning centre, etc., of the type that school groups could visit, and tourists, include a state-of-the-art operating shack, perhaps? Such a facility could be set up within an existing historical precinct where buildings or space are available, a site such as the old railway workshops in Midland, and I'm sure other suitable sites could also be considered. Have any of you seen the National Radio Centre at Bletchley Park in England? Something along those lines, or similar, or maybe more. I'm being deliberately vague when describing what such a facility could be because it needs to be the result of thorough investigation, research and discussion. And I'm not looking for a job, but I might like to be part of it. What I'm suggesting is that a conversation starts, and if enough interest is shown and the ideas start to flow, an organisation, call it what you like, but something neutral like Amateur Radio Western Australia might do, but that's only detail, and I'm getting ahead of myself. After this weekend, unless someone beats me to it, and I'd be quite pleased if they did, I'll kick off the conversation on email and Facebook and test the waters. I'm Bob VK6POP.
News West next week explores the world of the new amateur. We'll acknowledge those who've gained a new or upgraded license and hand out some gratuitous but sage advice to newcomers. And this may even prove useful for old hands too. What was it like for you when you first dipped your toe into the amateur radio pond? Would you like to tell us how it was for you? Believe it or not, your story will be interesting to others. Or perhaps if you're long past being a beginner and you're an old hand at amateur radio now, and there's something you'd like to pass on to newcomers, that story's also welcome. All you need to do is write it down and record it. Usually about 300 words makes a nice size piece. You can make a decent recording on a smartphone these days. Just set it to the best quality your device can manage and avoid a noisy environment. If you're a bit uncertain about making your own recording, drop us a line to newswest@vk6.net and we can interview you either face-to-face or via a two-person meeting via Zoom, Skype or something similar. Please send all contributions as email attachments to newswest@vk6.net.
This is VK6ARN and you're listening to News West.
Good morning, this is Roy VK6XV with this week's helpline for the 15th of May 2022. And I have the following for you. I have a couple of Kenwood Tango Sierra 440 Sierra HF transceivers. 100 watts output with microphone matching power supply for the first one. And both have been professionally serviced in very good working order. And the first one is asking $450 with the power supply. And the other Kenwood TS440S HF transceiver, 100 watts output, also professionally serviced. Good working order, $400. For those two Kenwood 440s, please contact Jeff, VK6 Zulu Yankee, on 0414-919-141. 0414-919-141, or email to Kilo, Uniform, Lima, Juliet, India, Romeo, Alpha, dot, Hampton, Hotel Alpha Mike Papa Tango Oscar November, that is, at gmail.com. The email address once again is Kilo Uniform Lima Juliet India Romeo Alpha dot Hotel Alpha Mike Papa Tango Oscar November at gmail.com. Next group of items comes from Alan, VK6 Oscar Lima Delta. He has three Yaesu batteries. Identification is Fox November Bravo Dash 80 Lima India, unused. There's three batteries for Yaesu and one Yaesu Charlie Delta 15 Alpha desktop rapid charger for above. Suits the Yaesu Victor X-Ray 5, Victor X-Ray 6 or the Victor X-Ray 7 handhelds. $50 the lot. Contact Alan by email. His email address is victorkilo0limadelta@yahoo.com. VictorKilo0LimaDelta@yahoo.com, located in Wellington. I believe there's still a Wolf River portable antenna available, vertical, 24-inch extension to convert it to a centre-loaded antenna. It has silver bullet, 1,000 coil. It covers 80 through 10 metres. Includes mega tripod and 24-inch legs, collapsible 102-inch whip antenna, and three 30-foot radials. Asking $250, please contact VK6 Zulu Mike Sierra on his email address, which is vk6zulumikesierra@iinet.net.au. Victor Kilo 6 Zulu Mike Sierra at iinet.net.alphauniform. That's all for me for this week. Thank you for those who are listening and those who contributed. 73 till next time. Roy VK6XV is my email address at bigpond.com. Victor Kilo 6 X-Ray Victor at bigpond.com. Cheers from he, cheers from him. All the best, 73.
Thanks for listening, and if you're listening on air, don't forget to thank the person operating the broadcast or the relay while you're giving your callback. NewsWest is produced by WA Amateur Radio News, an independent amateur radio club incorporated in Western Australia. Our website is vk6.net and we can be contacted by emails to newswest@vk6.net. Next week we're paying attention to new amateurs, and what better time to join the hobby with the sun turning handsprings making global contacts easier than they've been in a long time. So it's a good time to get on air and make some noise.